In the fourth parak, we are now moving on from discussing what is laned on each of the chagim to discussing how is the laning done, the halachas of Kriyas HaTorah. In the Mishnah Aleph, we're going to actually start out by talking about some of the halachas of the Mikra Megillah, of the laning of the Megillah, and then we will quickly morph into discussing the halachas of Kriyas HaTorah. So Mishnah Aleph starts as follows, HaKore Es HaMegillah, Omed V'Yoshev. Somebody who's laning the Megillah can either stand or sit. You have the option, Kera'a Echad, if you have either one person laning to fulfill the mitzvah for other people, so it's one person being motzi others, or two people synchronizing their laning and laning the Megillah at the same time in order to fulfill, for example, the mitzvah for others. You have a whole tzibur listening and two people want to read it together, that would be acceptable. Typically, we have a concept of trei kale lo mishtame, which means two voices cannot be heard. For example, if we had the Kriyas HaTorah, two people laning together, the tzibur cannot be yotze because trei kale, two voices cannot be heard. We can't focus on those voices. We're hearing both, not one. However, when something is considered a davar hachaviv, something that is fond to us, and when it comes to the Mikra Megillah, either because it's an exciting thing to listen to, the story is riveting, or because it doesn't happen that often, the Megillah is only read once a year, we are sure to focus on it, so we would say trei kale, in this case, is mishtami, two voices can be heard. So that's why one person, two people, or even more, we could fulfill the mitzvah when it comes to Mikra Megillah, but not when it comes to Kriyas HaTorah and various other mitzvahs. Makom shenaagu levarach yavarach, v'shalo levarach lo yavarach. Places that the minhag is to say the bracha after the Megillah, which is haravet rivenu, in those places you have to adhere to the minhag makom and say the bracha. Places that they don't have that minhag, you cannot say the bracha. Now, when it comes to the bracha beforehand, there are three brachas before the Mikra Megillah. We're not discussing that. All places would say the three brachas. Number one, Al Mikra Megillah. Number two, Sha'as Anisim. And number three, Shehechianu. Now we are moving over to discuss the halachas of Kriyas HaTorah. Initially about Basheni, Ubachamishi, Ubas Shabbos B'mincha. When it comes to the laning on Monday, Thursday, and Shabbos Mincha, Korin Shlosha. We have three people that are called up. Three people laying, it's actually at the time of Chazal that they would not have each person say a bracha when they had an aliyah and have a bal kore. It was a very different concept of Kriyas HaTorah than what we have. They had only one person at the beginning of all the laning say a bracha, the bracha of Asher Bachar Banu, and only the last person who had quote unquote an aliyah would say the bracha afterward, Asher Nasan Lanu, and no one in between. They would be called up in order to lane. So when it came to Sheni, Shlishi, and when it came to Sheni and Chamishi and Shabbos, by Mincha, three people were called up to lane. They divide up the laning in three, and the first said a bracha and the last said the bracha afterward. Ain't Pol Chasin, we do not have fewer than three. Why do we have three at all? Either to represent Torah, Nevim, and Ksuvim as Tanakh, or because Kohen Levi v'Yisrael, so that would be three. The Mishnah now says Ve'ain Mosifim Aleim. We also do not have more than three. We don't have a suffix like some places have on Shabbos that you can have more than seven people add aliyahs. We don't do that when we have on a Monday, on a Thursday, and a Shabbos Mincha. And in addition, Ve'ain Maftirin Benavi, we also don't lane a Haftorah as we do at certain other times. Why don't we have more than three aliyahs, or three olim, and why don't we have a haftorah? So the reason is the same for both of them. We want to keep the service relatively short when it comes to Monday and Thursday. People needed to get out to work, so let's not have more than three. Let's not have an haftorah. And when it comes to Shabbos, Mincha, people have been in the shul, at least at the time of Chazal, they've been in the shul learning, hearing shiurim. Now it's close to the end of Shabbos. They got to get home, got to have suda shlishis afterward. So keep it relatively short. Don't have more than three and don't have a haftorah. Just to complete the Mishnah, HaPoseach v'Achosim b'Torah, as we mentioned before, it's the first person and the last person, Mevarach Lefanehu l'Acharez, they say the brachas before and afterward, but anyone in between, for example, in our scenario when we have three people that are laning, the person in between, number two, does not say any brachas. The first Ola, which would be Kohen, before the laning, says Asher Bachar Banu, he lanes the first piece, The Levi would come up, lane the second piece without saying any brachas, and the Yisrael would lane the third piece, and at the end he would say, Asher Nasan Lanu. That changed between the time of the Mishnah and the time of the Gemara that Chazal instituted, that each person that would come up would say a bracha before and after, and in addition we typically have a Baal Korah that does all the kriyas, so the Olim are simply saying the brachas. Just a little bit halacha lemaisa in this regard, we mentioned that somebody who lanes the Megillah has the option of sitting or standing, but truth be told, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, brought lahalacha, that somebody who lanes for the tzibur, for the community, lechatchila, should do it standing. We're talking about Mikra Megillah because of kavod of tzibur. That is respect for the tzibur. Somebody who lanes from the Torah has to stand. The Baal Korah has to stand. In addition, when it comes to the brachas, we paskin that somebody who's saying the brachas, even if he's laning biachidus, he should stand for the brachas, even if he's going to sit for the actual laning of the Megillah. And also in shul, that the Baal Korah, we said, should be standing because of kavod tzibur. Not only he should stand for the brachas, but everyone, the entire tzibur, should stand as well. Also, we mentioned that trei kale, typically lo meshtame, two voices cannot be heard, but when something is chaviv, something is fantas, for example, Mikra Megillah, Trei Kale is Mishtame, we can hear even two, three, four voices. That is how we paskin. However, if somebody feels, and this is brought lahalacha, if somebody feels that because of the multiple voices, he is unable to pay attention, accordingly, he is not yotze the mitzvah. So that's an important point. Typically, Trei Kale, when it comes to Mikra Megillah, is okay, but when it comes to somebody subjectively feels he's not able to concentrate on a voice and hear the words, then he would not be yotze. Find a different laning. Mishnah Beis continues, Baroshei Chodoshim uvacholo shomoid on Rosh Chodesh and Cholomoid Korin Arba. We have four people come up to the Torah. Ein pochasin mem, we don't have fewer than four. Vein mosifim alem, we also don't have more than four. Vein maftirin benavi, we also don't have a haftorah. So why don't we have more than four and why don't we have a haftorah? Same answer as before. On Rosh Chodesh, it's permitted to work. And on Chol HaMoed, although it's generally prohibited to work, if it's something that is considered a davar ha'avid, well, somebody will incur a financial loss in that situation, it's permitted to work. Accordingly, we don't want to unnecessarily elongate the service by having more than four people come up to the Torah and by adding a haftorah. Continuing, haposeach v'achosim b'torah mevarach lefaneh ulacharah, as we mentioned in the prior Mishnah, it's only the first person who comes up and the last person who comes up who say the brachas both before and afterward. They don't say, not each person that gets called to an aliyah has the bracha. So only the first one says Asher Barachar Banu, and the last one says Asher Nasan Lanu, and nothing in between. Zaklal, this is the major principle that we're talking about. Kol sheyesh bo musaf, any day that has musaf, ve'eino yomtav, and is not a yomtav. In other words, Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed, they do have musaf, but they are not a yomtav. Korin Arba, there are four people who are called up to the Torah. Now we're going to go on with this general concept here of when a day goes up in Kedusha, there will be another person that comes up to the Torah. So just as we said, we started with three on a regular day, three Olim, and then we went to Rosh Chodesh, and Chol HaMoed went up to four. Now, B'Yom Tov Chamisha, when it comes to Yom Tov, which is on a higher level of Kedusha than Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed, there will be five people called to the Torah. Why is it on a higher level of Kedusha? How do we see that it's on a higher level of Kedusha? Because if somebody does Malacha, prohibited work, on Yom Tov, that person receives Malkos, receives lashes. B'Yom HaKippurim Shisha, on Yom HaKippur, which is on a higher level, a person who would do Malacha is Chayev Kares, not just Malkus, lashes, but Kares, excision. We see that Yom Kippur is in a higher level than Yom Tov. Accordingly, we have six people who are Oled to the Torah. And B'Shabbos, which is on a higher level of even Yom Kippur, because Shabbos, when somebody desecrates Shabbos and fulfills the technical requirements, he had warning and there were Edim, there is a punishment of Skila. The person is stoned to death. That is a much more severe punishment. Accordingly, with the higher level of Kedusha of Shabbos, we have another Olel Torah. We have Shiva. We have seven people coming to the Torah. And the same statement that we've seen before, Ein Pochasim, and we don't go below each of those. In other words, when it comes to Yom Tov, we don't go below five. When it comes to Yom Kippur, we don't go below six. When it comes to Shabbos, we don't go below seven. However, Aval mosifim aleihem, we can have hosafas on each of those. We can go more than 5, 6, or 7 on each of those days. And in addition to maftirim benavi, we have a haftarah. Again, we're not concerned here when it comes to these days that people need to get out to work, because you're not permitted to work on any of these days. We're not permitted that we're not concerned of having additional olim, and we're not concerned about having the haftarah because people have time on these days. And in addition, haposeach vachosem b'torah, as we've seen, this is the third time in this Mishnah, it's only the first person who has the aliyah, he's the poseach, and the last person who has the aliyah, that's the chosem b'torah, mevorach lefanel l'acharah, they will say the brachas, the bracha before all of the laning, and the bracha after all of the laning. Again, as we mentioned before, that changed by the time of the Gemara, like our construct, that we have a set bal koreh, and each person who is called to the Torah has his own, quote-unquote, aliyah, says a bracha before and after. Just a couple interesting points when it comes to Kriyas HaTorah. The minhag that we have, although the Mishnah says that we can add Hosaf as additional olim on Yontif, we can have more than 5 Yom Kippur, we can have more than 6 on Shabbos, more than 7, the minhag is to not add except on Shabbos. Shabbos is the time that people do add, but the minhag is to not add on Yontif and Yom Kippur. However, the exception to the rule would be Simchas Torah, where we do have a Safas, even though it's a Yontif, that it's the only day, a non-Shabbos day, that we do have a Safas. Just another interesting point, we talked about 5, 6, and 7, truth be told, we have the maftir as well. So it's not 5 and 6 and 7 aliyahs, but it's 6, 7, and 8 aliyahs when we count the maftir. And indeed, the maftir would count, strictly speaking, Meir Kardin, the maftir is an ola. So that would count and fulfill the requirement of 5, 6, and 7. So we really need only 4 and the ola for the maftir. We only need 5 with the ola, the maftir, and Yom Kippur. That would get us to 6. And Shabbos, we only need 6. And the ola, the maftir, would be 7. However, nonetheless, because we saw Me'ikar Adin, we are allowed to add on, even on Yontif and Yom Kippur. Accordingly, the way we count it is we have 5 and 6 and 7. And in addition, we have the next one, which would be an additional number, who is the maftir. Mishnah Gimel discusses that for Kriyas HaTorah and also for the laning of the Haftorah, we need a minyan, and while we're discussing those, the Mishnah mentions other times when 10 men above the age of Bar Mitzvah are required. The Mishnah starts out listing what we call Dvarim Shebe Kedusha, for example, Kaddish Kedusha and Baruch Hu. These are a special category that any Dvar Shebe Kedusha requires 10 men, and then we'll go a little bit later in the Mishnah to list out things that are not categorized as a Dvar Shebe Kedusha, not Kaddish Kedusha Baruch Hu, but Chazal nonetheless instituted that we would require 10 men above the age of Bar Mitzvah to do those activities regardless. Mishnah Gimel, in Porsin as Shema, this is an interesting concept. We don't see it very often nowadays, that if 10 men missed Minyan, they came in late to Minyan, they arrive after Kriyat Shema, so they missed Baruch Hu and Kaddish, what they can do is the 10 can band together, and one person can say on their behalf, starting from Kaddish and Baruch Hu, and say the first of the two brachas of the Kriyat Shema. That's because a Baruch Hu is an invitation to say a bracha, so you have to say at least the first of the two brachas of the Kriyat Shema. That's why it is called Pores Eshema. Pores means dividing, so you're dividing the bracha of Shema, because you have to say one of them at least. So ain't parsing as Shema, you can do that procedure. The ain't overing lifnei ateva, the chazan doesn't go lifnei ateva before the amud, in other words, to say the chazarat hashatz. They nosim es kapayim, the kohanim do not go and duchen nisiyas kapayim to bless the kahal. Vein korim b'torah, we don't have the kriyas ha-torah, vein maftirim b'navi, and we can't say the haftarah. All those are considered devarim shepegdusha. 10 men above the age of bar mitzvah are required for each of those. And now we're going to talk about things that may not be considered a davar shebegdusha, but require 10 men nonetheless. Veinosi ma'amaru moshav, ma'amaru moshav, literally standing and sitting. This is the process then they were, when they were carrying a mace, somebody who passed away, to be buried in the cemetery, so that they would go, and as they would walk, they would actually sit down and have some eulogies, and then somebody would announce time to get going, stand up, and then we'd go again. And this happened 7 times, that there was an announcement, time to sit, after the eulogy, time to stand. So the ma'amaru moshav, that procedure would only be done if there are at least 10 men attending. Ven osi ma'amaru moshav, continuing. Ven omrim birkas avelim, they literally would say the bracha to the avelim. The bracha to the avelim is now after the burial. They had a minhag of sitting in the street and saying various brachas to the avelim. So that was only done with a minimum of 10. V'tanchumei avelim, tanchumei avelim. Just to mention a number of these things, we do not have these minhagim nowadays. But tanchumei avelim, we have something similar. What they did at the time of Chazal is that the avelim would stand in a row, and people would pass by and give them comfort. Tanchumei. Nowadays, we do a little different. The people who are not Avelim stand Beshura, we stand there, and it's the Avelim black pass between them. So we have a little bit different of a minhag. Birkas Chasanim, this is a minhag that we certainly have today. This is the Sheva Brachas that we say either at the Chuppah or at the meal after the Chuppah, after the Chuppah at the meal at the Chasana, or for the week thereafterward. We also say the Birkas Chasanim. So there, in that instance, and the Chasan is included in there, as opposed to when we're talking about the Avelim requiring 10. The Avel would not be included in the minyan. Birkas Chasanim is something we indeed do nowadays. Ve'in mezamni b'shem, when we have 10 men above the age of bar mitzvah who have eaten together, we have the Birkas Hamazon, we have the mezuman, but we also add Elokeinu. So that is only when we have 10 do we add Elokeinu. So that's what the Mishnah says. Ve'in mezamni b'shem, all of those pachos mi'asar, we don't do any of these activities if there are fewer than 10 men there. Now, another couple things to mention. Ubikarkos, this is literally, that means land. What it's talking about is when somebody wants to purchase land that has been donated to the Beis HaMikdash. So in order to buy that out from the Beis HaMikdash, we need a valuation to be done. And that is done Tisha Vikoin, at least 10 people, 10 men, but at least one of them has to be a Kohen based on a Pasuk. Van, a similar concept, Adam Kiyotzebahem, when a person says, I'm going to donate my market value to the Beis HaMikdash, he makes a vow that he's going to be Makdish, his value. How do we ascertain what his value is? So it goes through the same process, 10 men, and at least one of them has to be a Kohen. Just to mention one interesting point, Lahalacha, we've said that Dvarim Shebekdusha, Kaddish, Kedusha, Baruch Hu, for example, require 10 men. So how about when we're davening and we're saying, if we're davening B'yachidus, if we can't make minyan for whatever reason, and we get to before the Kriyat Shema, the Bracha, Birkas Yotzer HaMe'oros. So we're davening, and in that context also, we have Kadosh, 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 and Baruch Kevod. Is that considered like our Kedusha? Like we have in the repetition of the Shemoneh Esrei, that is a Davar Shebe Kedusha that we require 10 men, or is that not of a Davar Shebe Kedusha and we can say that B'yichidus? So in fact, that's a machlokis in the poskim. There is an opinion that says you can say it by yourself, not a problem. It's just sipur dvarim. We're just telling about the kedusha that the malachim say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're just describing that, but it's not an actual kedusha that we are saying, like in the Shemoneh Esrei, in the repetition of the Shemoneh Esrei, that is kedusha. We are saying the kedusha. On the other hand, there's an opinion that an individual davening without a minion has to skip this kedusha. It's actually like a real kedusha, like the kedusha of in the repetition of the Shemoneh Esrei. Indeed, we fundamentally Paskin, like the first opinion, it can be said by an individual, even Davin and Beachidus, but because we do have that second opinion, it's brought la'alacha that we should be concerned about that second opinion. So what we do is when we're saying the Kadosh, Kadosh, and Baruch Kavod, we should say it with the trup of the Torah, the nigunim of the Torah, so as if to say that we are really laning it. We're really saying this not as a kedusha, which would require a minion, but we're saying it as if we're laning from the Torah, which would like be learning Torah, which would not require a minion. Mishnah Dalet requires a little bit background. At the time of Galus Bavel, between the first and the second temples, Klal Yisrael, in that short period of 70 years, forgot Hebrew. Many of them forgot Hebrew, and the chosen language, the spoken language, was Aramaic. So in fact, during Kriyas HaTorah was instituted at the time of Ezra, that because people didn't understand the Kriyas HaTorah, what they would do is, for each and every pasuk, there would be a miturgaman, a translator that would translate the pasuk into Aramaic. So that's important background for us. This minhag, by the way, did not continue for other languages when we were in Galus and other places, because Aramaic was special, because the translation was written through Ruach HaKodesh, through divine inspiration, and other languages were not. So that's important background for us to get going on our Mishnah. Just another important piece of information. The Meturgaman, the translator, did not read from a text. He did it orally. So there was a concern. If you read too many psukim at a time, he would get confused and not be able to translate coherently. So the Mishnah says as follows, HaKoreh BaTorah. Somebody who's reading a Torah, somebody who's laning, lo yivchos mishlosha psukim, cannot read fewer than three psukim, as we see in all of our parshias. For example, when we read on Monday and Thursday, each reading, Kohen Levi v'Yisrael, has a minimum of three psukim in it. And in addition, at the time when they had this meturgaman, the translator, translating into Aramaic, lo yikra lemeturgaman, yosar mipasuk echad, you would go one pasuk at a time. You cannot go two psukim to the translator because he may get confused. And this is a very problematic thing, especially when reading Torah, because there are halachas that are learned from the Torah. So we want things to be clear and crisp and not to cause people to make mistakes because the translation was off. So don't read any more than one pasuk and then let the translator go and then read another pasuk from the Torah and then let the translator translate that one pasuk. However, that contrasts with Uvenavi Shlosha when they were reading the Haftarahs from the Nevi'im. We weren't as concerned about having a clear translation. Obviously, we want one, but they could read three psukim at a time because there aren't many halachas that are learned from Nevi'im. So we didn't have that ultimate concern about having confusion when it comes to the translation. Continuing, Hayu Shloshtan Shalosh Parshios Korin Echad Ve'echad. However, when we're reading from the Navi and each of the three psukim that we would otherwise read to the translator, they are separate issues. For example, in Yeshayahu Perak Nun Bet, there are three psukim and each is effectively a separate issue, a separate paragraph. Those, even though typically we would read to the Meturgaman three at a time out of the Navi, we would do those one at a time. Continuing in the Mishnah is now is talking about that we should be reading from the Sefer Torah consecutive psukim and from the Nevi'im for the Haftarah consecutive psukim, but there are times maybe that we're going to want to skip or have to skip for the Kriya. An example of this would be when we read Vayechal on a Yitzom, a fast day, on a Tainis, we indeed do skip some of the psukim. So the Mishnah here says, Medalgi Benavi. We can skip when we're reading the Nevi'im. It's talking about you can even skip to a different subject while you're reading the Navi. However, Ve'ein Medalgi Benavi, when it comes to the Kriya, you cannot skip to a different subject. You're only permitted to skip within the same subject. So that's why we can skip on a Tainis and Vayecha, because we're skipping to the same subject. And then the Mishnah says, Vat Kama Hu Medaleg, and for how much ahead can you skip? In other words, when you're skipping, if it's a distance, you're going to have to roll the scroll. So if it's a Sefer Torah or a Navi scroll, you would have to be rolling it, and you don't want there to be a Tircha de Tzibura, people having to wait. There's a similar concept when preparing a Sefer Torah. Prepare it before the davening, so when you take it out, it's at the right place for laning, and don't start rolling it right before the laning, right then when everyone's waiting, because that's a Tircha de Tzibura. That is making people wait. It's a Tircha. It's matriach them. It's a burden for the Tzibur. So accordingly, the Mishnah is now asking if you have to roll. How much can you roll in the Sefer Torah if it's within the same subject or within the Navi, even if it's different subjects? So the response in the Mishnah is, Ad kedei shelo yivtzo kameturgaman, to the extent that you will finish rolling before the translator finishes his translation. So that's the amount. We should finish rolling by that time. Otherwise, people are going to be waiting at a time that the translator is not translating, and that would be a Tircha de Tzibura, an unfound burden on the congregation. Mishnah requires a little bit background. Mi'ikar Adin, the Haftarah that we read, for example, on Shabbos and Yontif, can be read by a katan, somebody below the age of Bar Mitzvah. And accordingly, at the time of Chazal at least, that was viewed as a lesser significant kibud than the other aliyahs. The other aliyahs wouldn't be given to a katan, only the maftir. So if somebody who was above the age of Bar Mitzvah was given the Haftarah, what we wanted to do is give him other kibudim as well to make him feel better that he was not getting a less honorable position on the given Shabbos or Yontif in the shul. So that's one important piece of information. Another important piece of information is that the time of Chazal, not like nowadays that the Shliach Tzibur will start either at Bracha, Rabbis or Rabbi Yishmol Omer or Hodu, depending on if it's Nusach Svard or Nusach Ashkenaz, or some places even, they'll start at Yishtabach and they then start and say Kaddish and Kedusha and go all the way through. At the time of Chazal, the Shaliach Tzibur, in his official capacity as the Chazan, as the Shatz, would start at Chazarat HaShatz. And in other words, they would have somebody, it could be the same person, a different person, but not as a chazan per se, standing up at the Amud, would be saying what we described in the prior Mishnah as Pores al Shema, saying the Kaddish and Baruch Hu, and then only standing up as the chazan at Chazarat HaShatz. So what we're going to see here, a maftir benavi, somebody who got the aliyah, somebody who normally gets the maftir aliyah from the Nevim, that's read from the Navi, in it, to make him feel better that he's not getting a less respected, less important kibud, who he would also be given other kibudim, who Pores al Shema, he was given the ability to Pores al Shema, which was he would say the Kaddish and the Baruch Hu, the Hu Over, Lifnei Ateva, and then when the Chazan got up for the repetition of the Smona Esrei, he would be the person chosen to be over Lifnei Ateva that would do that. And if he is a Kohen, the Hu Nosen as Kapav, he would also literally Duchim, but what it means is when there were other Kohanim there as well, he would act as the leader. So he would start a little bit before them and they would follow suit based on his lead. V'im Haya Katan, if this person who is getting the Maftir Haftarah, he was a katan himself, if he was somebody below the age of bar mitzvah. In other words, he wasn't able to kick up these other kibudim, because a katan cannot lead the tzibur, cannot say Kaddish Kedusha, cannot say the Chazarat HaShatz. Aviv or Rabo Arvin al Yado, it would be either his father or his Rebbe, his teacher, that would do the parts of leading the tzibur that the katan wasn't able to. In other words, the katan could get the maftir, but cannot over Lifnei Ateva, cannot do Pores al Shema, cannot lead the Chazarat HaShatz, cannot say Kaddish and Baruch Hu, and accordingly those roles would be filled by his father or his teacher. Mishnah Vav, now that we started discussing if a katan, somebody below the age of the bar mitzvah, can lead as the chazan, we're going to talk about further halachas as it relates to a katan, and then we're going to go and discuss other people who may or may not be fit to lead the tefillah. So when it starts out with a katan, katan kore batora umetargim, a katan, halachically speaking, mi'ikar adin, can actually read of the Sefer Torah. The rationale for that is that the reading in the Sefer Torah is not a chiyuv in each individual, that we have a katan now who isn't chayuv b'mitzvah, is fulfilling a mitzvah for there on their behalf, since being motzei them, that is not the case. Rather, the chiyuv is that people hear a kriyas Torah, that there is shmiah, that there be a kriyas Torah in the shul. Accordingly, the katan is fulfilling that need, that there will be a kriyas Torah in the shul. He's not fulfilling an individual obligation for each individual there. And accordingly, if he can read from the Torah, he can also umetargim, be the translator of the reading. Aval eino pores et shema, as we mentioned before, he cannot act as the individual who is going to say the Kaddish and Baruch Hu on behalf of the Tzibur, ve'eino over lifnei ateven. He also cannot do the Chazarat HaShatz as the official Chazan, because he is not a Bar Chiyuva, he is not obligated yet in Dvarim Shebekdusha, so he cannot fulfill that obligation on behalf of the people. May no know say as kapav. In addition, if he is by himself and the only kohen there, he cannot duchen and bless the tzibur. That would not be a kavod tzibur, a proper respect for the tzibur, to have a simple katan, somebody below the age of bar mitzvah, giving them a birkas kohanim. Now we're going to move on to discuss if somebody is not dressed properly, can that person lead the tefillah? So we're going to talk about somebody who's pocheach. Pocheach is somebody whose clothing is tattered, clothing is torn. For example, his arms are exposed, his shoulders are exposed. Pocheach, pores et shema, such a person can be pores et shema. In other words, that's not acting as the shaliach tzibur that was done before the shaliach tzibur went up for the chazrat hashatz, as we mentioned in the prior mishnayas. Such an individual in pores shema, somebody who's not dressed fully properly with his arms covered, can be Pores as Shema, because he's not the Chazan per se, and Umetargim, and he can act as the translator of the Kriyas Torah. That's not such an important task. However, Aval Eino Kore B'Torah, he is not permitted to act as the Baal Kore reading the Torah. That would not be Kavod HaTorah. The Eino Over Lifnei Ateva, he cannot act as the Chazan for the Chazarat HaShat. The Eino Nose as Kapav, he also can't Duchen if he's a Kohen. Both of those latter things, acting as the Chazan and acting as the Kohen Duchen, something is not covered a tzibur if he's not dressed properly. The Mishnah concludes talking about a suma. A suma is a blind man. What can he do and not in these contexts? So the Mishnah says as follows. Suma, pores es shema. Suma, no problem, according to the Tanakhama, with his being pores al shema, which is saying the Kaddish and the Baruch Hu and going through the Kriyas Shema umetargim, and he can also act as the translator of the Kriyas HaTorah. However, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he disagrees on one point when it comes to the Suma, Kol Shelo Ra'a Me'oris Me'yamav, any person who was never sighted. In other words, he never saw the Me'oris, the luminaries, the sun, moon, and stars, never had that ability. Eino Pores Al Shema, cannot be Pores Al Shema. Why is that? Because it's part of that Pores Al Shema, starting with the Kaddish and the Baruch Hu, and continuing with at least the Birchas Kriya Shema. In part of the Birchas Kriya Shema, we say Yotzer Or, it's a bracha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu who formed light, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, a suma, a blind person, doesn't see the light, doesn't benefit from the light. However, according to the Chachamim, who are the Tanakhama, they disagree. Even a suma can say the bracha as Biporesh Shema, and say the bracha to the Tzibur of Yotzer Or, because even if he isn't directly benefiting from light, from seeing, but other people who assist him are benefiting from the light in. And that enables them to assist that Suma. So they're able to see, they're able to assist them, and accordingly, the Suma is benefiting from the light, and from the light of the sun, for example, and can say the bracha Yotzer. There's some interesting halacha, Lamaisa, when it comes to a katan, somebody below the age of bar mitzvah, getting an aliyah, mi'ikar adin, under certain circumstances, we won't go through all the details, under certain circumstances, a katan can get an aliyah on Shabbos. Nonetheless, the minhag is to not give a katan an aliyah except for the maftir. A katan is indeed permitted, even based on a minhagim, to get the aliyah for maftir, continuing what a minor, somebody below the age of bar mitzvah, can or cannot do. He is not permitted to pores al shema, because that includes saying Kaddish and Baruch Hu. He also cannot act as a chazan for chazarat hashatz. When it comes to duchening, as we said in our Mishnah, a katan, if he's the only kohen, should not duchen even once. It should just not happen. But if with other kohanim who are above the age of bar mitzvah, indeed he can duchen even all of the time, not a problem whatsoever. And when it comes to dress, we talked about somebody who's clothing was torn, so if his shoulders are showing and his arms are exposed, that person should not lay red leaf ne'ateva, should not act as the chazan, should not act as the balkara. That would not be covered for the Torah. It would not be covered for the tzibur. But obviously, different tziburs, different congregations and shuls have their own standards for what dress is required. Shorts, do you require a jacket? Do you require a hat, long sleeves, whatever it may be? So every shul in excess, in addition to the minimum required by this halacha, each shul adheres to its own minhagim, and each individual davening in such a place would have to adhere to the minhagim of a given shul. Mishnah Zayin continues with another halacha as it relates to the Nisiyos Kapayim, the duchening, the priestly blessing given by the Kohanim. The Mishnah says as follows, Kohen Sheyesh Biyad of Mumin, Lo Yisas Kapav, a coin that has in his hands blemishes, there are certain deformities on the hands, places that people could be looking at and get distracted, he is not permitted to duchen, to give the priestly blessing. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he adds, not only that, Af Mishi Hayu Yada Tzvuas Itatis Ufua, in addition, somebody whose hands are dyed, certain colors, unusual colors, like a blue dye, that's Itatis Ufua, it's a red dye, Lo Yisa Es Kapav, should also not duchen, can also not give the priestly blessing. And now the Mishnah gives the reasons for both the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda why blemishes and also discolored hands are a problem. Because the tzibur who is being blessed will be distracted and they will stare at those hands because they are unusual. What's the problem with looking at the hands of the Kohanim during duchening? So the Bavli in Chagiga says the problem is somebody who looks, his eyes will become weakened because the person effectively is looking at the Shechina. The Shechina Shora descends upon the hands of the Kohanim when they're blessing the Am. And it's limited based on that, the Bavli, to in the Beis HaMikdash when they would say the real Shem Hashem, the Shem HaMeforash. Then Rashi explains the fish Shechina Shora Al Kishu Es Bosei, and when the Kohanim would be blessing and using the Shem HaMeforash, the Shechina of a Kodesh Baruch Hu would come and rest on their hands, and the bracha would be given to Klal Yisrael. According to the Yerushalmi, In Megillah, there's a different reason. The concept here is that people will get distracted. They should be paying attention to the brachas, receiving the brachas of the Kohanim with kavana, and not be distracted looking at hands that look unusual, like blemished hands or dyed hands. So the nafkamina between these two reasons is that the first one, that the Shechina is on the hands of the Kohanim, only applies at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when they would say the real Shem HaShem, the Shem HaMafurash. The second time of the Yerushalmi, that we shouldn't be distracted, applies also outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Also nowadays, that we don't say the Shem HaMafurash in all places, still we have to be paying close attention to the bracha and not be distracted by unusual forms of hands, unusual discolorations of the hands of the Kohanim. Now, Lamaisa, nowadays it's brought la'alacha that in order to take care of the problem, the Kohanim will cover their hands, and people also will cover their faces, both of them, with talesim to avoid the staring at the hands and more facilitate our having kavana and focusing on the brachas that the non-Kohanim are receiving. Mishnah Ches starts out by discussing certain people who are disqualified from acting as the chazan in a shul. HaOmer, somebody who says, Eini over lifnei ateva, I'm not going to act as the chazan b'tzvuim if I am wearing colored clothing. I'm only going to act as the chazan if I am wearing white clothing. That is something that the heretics would do. They would insist on wearing only white clothing when acting as the chazan. Such an individual, we're concerned he's a heretic. Af b'levanim lo yavor. We're going to not let him act as the chazan even if he's wearing white clothes, even though halachically speaking it doesn't matter. You can be wearing white clothing, you can be wearing colored clothing, but we see somebody who cares about such a thing, he must be a heretic. Similarly, besandal, somebody who says, besandal eini over, I am not going to act as the chazan if I am wearing shoes, sandals, literally sandals, but shoes or sandals, because he's insisting on doing it barefoot. That is something that the heretics would do, only acting as the chazan barefoot. Such an individual, we're not going to let him act as the chazan, he is disqualified. We're not going to even let him act as the chazan if he is barefoot, because we are concerned he is a heretic. Now, it happens to be that just in that tefillah, this is how we paskin, although it's a machlokas, in that tefillah we're not going to let him be a chazan, but in the future, hopefully it was only a one-time incident that he had some heresy that entered in his mind, it would not disqualify him from acting in the future as the chazan. Now, we're going to talk about some certainly similar concepts of when is there heresy, when is there not heresy. Ha'oset tefilaso agula, if somebody made his tefillah, which is talking about his tefillin, for example, tefillin sharosh, and Shayat, he made it rounded, and it's a halacha l'moshe misinai, we're required to have it square, perfectly square, but his is like a nut or an egg or something like that. And there are a couple ways to read the next word, sakana ve'in ba mitzvah. Some read it as sakana, it's a sakana if you have a rounded tefillin, if you bang your head, it can go and really damage your brain if it goes in. Another possible explanation is that even at a time of sakana, that the non-Jews have decreed we're not allowed to wear tefillin, even if you make your tefillin in a round in shape, you're still going to be in a sakana danger, because the goyim, the non-Jews who decreed, they don't care whether it's rounded or not. So you're not solving any issue by having a rounded tefillin. And in addition, vein ba mitzvah, there is no mitzvah having tefillin that's rounded, because we, as we mentioned, it's a halacha l'moshe misina, it's absolutely required to be square. Continuing and talking about the tefillin, nisana al mitzcho, if you wear it literally on your forehead, in other words, not between the eyes, but above the hairline, but you wear it literally on your forehead, between the eyes, or al kas yado, or on the palm of your hand, it's because that would be the way of the heretics, hareza derech haminus, heresy, because if you read the pasuk literally, it should be al yadecha v'ayulototofos beininecha, al yadecha should be on your hand, on the palm of your hand, and between your eyes. This is actually how the tzukim we only held by the Torah, should be chsav, the written law, not the oral law. They said we have to take things literally, so if we see somebody wearing the tefillin between the eyes or on the hand, we say this must be a heretic who takes the psukim literally and disregards the explanation of the oral law, and explaining that it's not literally on the palm, but it's on the top part of the eye, near the, on the bicep, and it's not literally between the eyes or on the forehead, but it's above the hairline, but that would be where, looking down, it's between the eyes. Continuing, tzipan zahav, if somebody covered the parchments, this is the parshios of the tefillin, in gold, not with the leather that from a kosher animal that's required based on a drush and the pasuk, and in addition, in the sana al beis unkelishalo, or somebody who's wearing his tefillin, for example, his tefillin shayad, but he is wearing it over his sleeve as opposed to placing it directly on his arm as required by the Torah. The Torah says it should be al yadecha, literally right on your skin. It also says lechalaos, it should be for you a sign. In other words, this isn't something that we should be showing off to the world on top of our clothing, but it should be underneath the clothing, or at least right on the body that could be underneath the clothing. So somebody who's disregarding that, it doesn't say such a person is a heretic, but it says harezo derech hachitzonim. Literally, that is somebody who is outside. He's making up his own explanations of the Torah, disregarding the explanations of Chazal. So he's outside what would be an acceptable explanation. I think we can probably say also what a chitzonim is somebody who is focused on externality, showing off. For example, somebody who makes his tefillin gold, wants to show off to others, that's chitzonim, that's showing off materialistic and external things and not worried about the intrinsic beauty of the mitzvahs. So that's somebody who's making it out of gold, putting it on outside his clothing, on top of this clothing, rather than keeping it directly based on chazal, that it should be included in leather, and it should be directly on our arms, not to be shown off, chitzonius, to the world. Mishnah Test discusses certain davening, certain prayers, and certain other practices that are unacceptable. So the Mishnah says as follows, Omer, Yevarchucha Tovim, somebody who says only the good should bless you, and we'll have to explain what that means, Hazreze Derech Mihaminus, this is the way of heresy. What we're talking about here, if it's somebody who says that only the good people should be able to daven to you, to be included in our minyan and davening together, we should only accept good people into the shul, that's the way of heresy. In fact, we see from the ketores, the incense that had many good smelling ingredients to it, but one was the chalbana, explains the Bar Tanrua, that was a very bad smell, and nonetheless, we included it together with the rest and the making up the ketores, the incense, to teach us that we have to include all members of Klal Yisrael, let them into the shul, let them daven, even they are sinners. Al kan sipor yagiu rachamecha, if somebody would say as follows, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just as you have compassion on that baby bird, that you should not take the baby bird, that you have the mitzvah shuluach haken, sending away the mother before taking the baby, so too you should have mercy upon us. The implication of this is that that's the whole basis of that mitzvah, is compassion, and in fact there is much more to the mitzvah, every mitzvah, than one simple explanation. And in fact, even more so, we have to be keeping the mitzvahs not because of the rationale for the mitzvah, but because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us. So that's the problem with that. If we just focus on the reason and nothing else, and one specific part of the reason and nothing else, that's very much limiting the mitzvahs. Baal Tov Yizachar Shemecha, and somebody who says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your name should be remembered for good on the good things that you do for us. In other words, this is acknowledging HaKadosh Baruch Hu only for the good, but for the bad, we don't want to acknowledge you. We want to disregard you in all the other realms. Chas v'shalom, we have to know that everything that comes to us, be it good and bad, comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kol mai da'avid rachman ala tavid, even the bad things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us, we have to know that it's really for the good. So we shouldn't be saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you should remember it only for the good. We have to take it all and know that it's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and hopefully we'll reach the level of saying this is all for the good and take it b'simcha as well. In addition, somebody who says modim modim in the context of davening, instead of just saying modim once, says modim twice, the implication is that he's saying thanks to two different gods. He's praying to two separate deities. That is apikorsis mishatkino. So indeed, in these cases, we have to silence the individual. These are unacceptable ideas. The Mishnah now continues with somebody who explains the Torah, the psukim of the Torah, in unacceptable ways. Hamechane ba'arayos mishatkino. Somebody who looks at the psukim dealing with arayos, dealing with illicit sexual relationships, and says it's not literal, it's simply a figure of speech. For example, the pasuk that says, don't uncover your mother's nakedness, he says, don't embarrass your mother. Don't come close to committing a sexual offense. And he explains it in a way that it's not literal, in a way that really thwarts and distorts the explanation of the psukim. That is mishatkino, so we have to tell such a person, you need to stop talking. We need to silence him. And similarly, haomer, another pasuk, umizaracha lo siten lahavir lamolech, that you should not literally pass your children over to molech. Molech was an avodah zara, and the children would be passed between fire to the avodah zara. And somebody would take that pasuk, which that's the pshat in the pasuk, and explains it in a non-literal, distorted way. For example, umizarach, your children, lo siten la'arabra, ba'ar ma'yusa, don't let an Aramean woman, ma'abra is to give birth to like me'ubar, pregnant, to your children. So in explaining it in a totally not pshat way, distorting the explanation, again, mishatkin ozo benezifa, we have to rebuke him with strength, because he is really distorting the halachas that we would learn that come out of the Torah. And even worse than explaining psukim in the wrong way is when they have halachic applications to them. For example, these figures saying that when it deals with arayos, illicit relations, that those are figures of speech. And when it talks about iser of avodah zarah going to molech, saying that it's not literal, that is when we not only mishatek him, to tell him he has to be silent, but we have to do it benezifa, we have to do it with strength, we have to rebuke him, because he's distorting not only the psukim, but psukim that have relevance to halacha lemaisa. People may act based on those explanations. That's even significantly worse. Mishnah Yod refers back to something we saw in the fourth Mishnah, that at the time of Ezra and for thereafter, when Klal Yisrael didn't understand the Hebrew, they instituted that the Torah reading and also the Haftorah, the Nevi'im, would be translated by a Meturgaman, a translator, into Aramaic. So our Mishnah is going to discuss certain parts of even the Torah reading, although the Torah had to be read, but certain parts would not be translated, and we'll explain why. And when it comes to the Navi, certain texts would actually not be used as the Haftorah. Even not translating them, but reading them in the Hebrew would also be inappropriate. So we're going to start off as follows. Maaseh Reuven. When it came to the story of Reuven, the pasuk says in Bereishis that Reuven went and he laid with Bilha, who was his father's concubine. The Gemara tells us it's not literal, but in any case, the Mishnah tells us that Maisa of Reuven Nikra, we read it in the Torah, obviously, we can't skip anything in the Torah. However, Velo Metargim, it should not be translated into Aramaic, because that would be a disgrace to Reuven. So in order to avoid that disgrace, just read it in the Hebrew, but don't translate it. Ma'aseh Tamar, the occurrence of Tamar, there are different explanations what this means. Is it talking about Yehuda and Tamar, or is it talking about the Maisa with Amnon, who was the son of David HaMelech, raped his half-sister, the daughter of David HaMelech? So that Maisa in Shmuel Bet, Maaseh Tamar Nikra Umitargem, it is read as a Haftorah, and it is also translated into Aramaic, even though people understand it. We'll see a little bit later that a couple psukim that refer to Amnon as David HaMelech's son will be deleted. We're not deleted out of the psukim, but we won't read it in public as a Haftorah. We don't want to disgrace David HaMelech that his son did something as disgraceful as raping his own half-sister. So, but the mice itself, Tamar Nikra Mitargem, for the most part, it is read, it is translated. Maaseh Egel, now we're going to divide up the Maaseh Egel, the sin of the golden calf, into two, brought in Shmos Lamed Bet. The first 20 psukim are when Klal Yisrael was responsible for saying Moshe Rabbeinu is late, let's do something about it. And there's what's called the second Maaseh Egel, which is simply the continuation of the unfortunate occurrence of the sin of the golden calf. That's when Aharon and the psukim is held responsible for the sin of the golden calf. So Maaseh Egel Harishon, if it's the first part of it, Nikra Umetargem, we not only read it, obviously we read it, it's in the Torah, but we also translate it, although it's the disgrace of Klal Yisrael, but it's good to be disgraced sometimes when you did something wrong, and it will hopefully inspire you to do tshuva. However, Vahasheni, the second part, when Aaron is held responsible, Nikra, it's read, the Lomitargim, but we don't want to translate it out of respect to Aharon. Continuing, Birkas Kohanim as well, is read because it's part of the Torah, but we don't translate it because there is a pasuk that says Yisa Hashem Panav Ilecha, may God show you His favor, and we're concerned that people may understand that as God shows favor to the Jews even when they don't deserve it, and we don't want misunderstandings to ensue, so we will not translate that pasuk. Continuing, Maaseh David va'Amnon, which we refer to above, the occurrence with Amnon raping his half-sister Tamar. So that occurrence, David va'Amnon lo nikraim v'lo mitargamin, the psukim, it's two specific psukim that refer to Amnon as the son of David HaMelech. We should not read those two psukim as a haftorah. When it comes to the Torah, we have no option. We have to read everything because we have to finish the Torah. But when it comes to the Nevi'im, we're not finishing the Nevi'im. We're simply choosing certain areas to lane as the haftorah. So we have the flexibility to skip these two psukim because we don't want to embarrass David HaMelech that his son acted in an unbelievably disgraceful manner. And continuing, Ein Maftirin B'Merkava. The first shita here is that the Maaseh Merkava, it's discussing a very Kabbalistic, mystical description of heaven. It's in Yechezkel, the first chapter of Yechezkel. The first opinion is we don't read that as a haftarah. The concern of this Tana Kama is that people, when they discuss all these very difficult to understand esoteric concepts of the Maaseh Merkava, they are going to be inspired to dig deeper. And in fact, this is not Maaseh Merkava. It's not something that's understandable to the vast, vast, vast majority of people. It's only the greatest Gedolei Yisrael that can have a chance at understanding it. So let's not even read it as the Haftorah so people don't get down, led the path of trying to understand it. V'Rabbi Yehuda Mati, Rabbi Yehuda says, it's no problem reading the Maaseh Merkava as a haftorah. In fact, we do read it as the haftorah on Shavuos. And the concept is because we're not concerned people are going to go down that path because it is so esoteric and difficult to understand. And then completing our Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer as of the view, we also don't, Ein Maftirin Behoda Es Yerushalayim, we also don't read the Yechezkel, it's the 16th parak, talking about the disgrace of Yerushalayim, the degradation of Yerushalayim. We also don't read about those abominations as a haftorah as well. We don't want to disgrace Yerushalayim.